Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for taking the time to watch and listen today. I'm joined by the Minister for Health and Social Care, David Ashford, MHK, and our Director of Public Health, Dr. Henrietta Hewitt. This week, we learned the sad news that an Isle of Man resident receiving treatment in the United Kingdom had died as a result of COVID-19. Our thoughts are with their family and loved ones at this difficult time. Since I last spoke to you a week ago, we have identified three new cases of COVID-19. Two of these cases were residents who returned to the island following a trip to the United Kingdom. They became symptomatic during self-isolation and called the COVID-111 line to request a test. Upon confirmation of a positive result, their period of isolation was extended by a further 14 days. The third case was a close contact of someone in the recent cluster of people who have tested positive for the virus. As this individual was identified through contact tracing as being at a high risk of contracting the virus, they were already self-isolating for 14 days. As with the two cases I've just referred to, this individual also became symptomatic during their period of isolation and contacted the COVID-111 service to request a test. Upon confirmation of a positive result, their period of isolation was extended by a further 14 days. I wish all three individuals a speedy recovery. The number of active cases of COVID-19 in the Isle of Man stands at 6. 4 of these are part of the recent small cluster, and we are seeing the small number of active cases beginning to tail off, which is encouraging. I've said time and again to so many of those affected by this virus, thank you. Thank you for following the rules and being responsible. Your actions have enabled us to move swiftly to test, isolate, and trace. You have helped us to contain the virus, preventing it from spreading throughout our community, and in doing so, lives and livelihoods have been protected. Moving quickly and ensuring the virus is contained means we can continue to enjoy our lives in relative normality. No physical distancing, no face masks, no restrictions on social gatherings. Last Thursday evening, we were reminded once again how very fortunate we are on the Isle of Man. It was the switch on of the Christmas lights in Douglas. Thousands of people filled the streets of our capital. Events like this occupy a special place in our national consciousness and are all too easy to take for granted. But 2020's switch on is particularly poignant given the situation that surrounds us. As one of the very few light switch-ons in the British Isles that the public will be able to attend. This year, the festive spectacle attracted attention from further afield, with coverage on BBC Breakfast and Good Morning Britain, in the Daily Telegraph, the Mail Online, and other national dailies. And so the switching on of the Christmas lights was not only a sight to behold for the thousands who attended, but also one for our neighbours. The festivities quite literally shone a light on our island and all that together we have achieved as a community in keeping the virus at bay, which is allowing us to enjoy a normal build-up to Christmas. Next week sees the start of December, and people's thoughts here in the United Kingdom and around the world are increasingly focused on the festive season and what the impact the virus will have. On Wednesday, the United Kingdom and the devolved administrations in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland unveiled a jointly agreed plan to allow a slight easing of restrictions between the 23rd and the 27th of December across the whole of the United Kingdom. It will create a Christmas window to allow up to 3 households to form a Christmas bubble, with a suspension of the rules that restrict travelling between the 4 nations and regions in different tiers of restrictions. It is a glimmer of hope and will make life easier for some, but it does come with risk. Leaders in the United Kingdom have been at pains to point out that this is a matter of personal judgment for individuals and families to take, and that in any event, Christmas in the United Kingdom will not and cannot be normal this year. Here on the island, despite all we have achieved, our Christmas will not be immune from the impact of the virus. Restrictions remain in place at our borders, and we remain at level 4 of our borders framework. The Council of Ministers continues to review the situation on the island and in the jurisdictions that surround us. But we must be realistic. Given the continuing prevalence of the virus in the UK and Ireland, it is all but certain that we will have to remain on level 4 of our borders framework for the remainder of this year. This means continuing to restrict who can come to the island, limiting it to returning residents, key workers, and those granted permission to come on compassionate grounds. As a result, many of us will not be able to welcome loved ones onto our island this Christmas, and I know this is causing unease for many. These decisions are never easy, and the impact they can have on our community weighs heavily on me personally and my colleagues in the Council of Ministers. There is a growing sense of anticipation, and I believe a clear collective will in our community to maintain the status quo and keep the virus from spreading across our island this December. To do otherwise would risk a Christmas that, for the vast majority, will be normal in many more ways than we had dared hoped for earlier in the year. But we have not crossed the finish line. We must maintain a laser focus on doing all we can to keep our wider community free of the virus. We have to remain vigilant and avoid complacency. It is our actions and behaviours that have helped keep the virus at bay, and it is our actions and behaviours that will determine whether we can enjoy a COVID-free Christmas in the Isle of Man. Henrietta, I know you wanted to say a few words on this topic, please.
Yes, thank you, Chief Minister. First of all, I wanted to build on your comments about the Christmas light switch-ons, because I've had a number of emails this past week from people who were anxious and concerned that maybe these gatherings shouldn't be happening, and are also concerned about whether it's safe to participate in large Christmas events of other types, either large Christmas dinners, Christmas markets and so on. The answer at the moment is yes, we don't have COVID circulating in the community. So with the proviso that so long as anyone who has been instructed to self-isolate follows that guidance to the letter, then the rest of us are safe and we can enjoy these gatherings as we would normally, and as was the case in Douglas last week and will be the case at further Christmas events in the coming weeks. What each of us can do is follow the hygiene advice. So that's hand hygiene, washing our hands more frequently for a total of 20 seconds. Throughout the rest of the year, we advise people to judge that time by singing a couple of verses of the Happy Birthday song. For a seasonal take on that, you can now replace that with a couple of verses of Jingle Bells, and it will do the same timing for you. Beyond that, it's the respiratory hygiene advice. So if you're coughing or sneezing, do it into a tissue, which you immediately bin and then clean your hands, or cough into your elbow. It's very important that we keep doing those things, and not only will that prevent any residual risk of COVID that we might encounter, but it will also keep us protected from flu and norovirus. And we're actually seeing low rates of those, which is, you know, an inadvertent byproduct bonus, if you like, from people's behaviour. So just to say that people really should, all of us, should keep going with those hygiene measures.
Thank you very much, Henrietta. And Jingle Bells, you heard it here first. Now, despite restrictions at our border, Isle of Man residents continue to be free to travel with a 14-day period of self-isolation on return for the travellers and since last Thursday, the 19th of November, for all other members of the household. To ease the impact of this measures on non-travellers in the household, government is making available a contribution of up to £250 a week towards the cost of alternative accommodation for returning residents. The latest figures show that the number of accommodation providers registered with the self-isolation scheme has increased to 134, now with over 900 bed spaces available. Take-up of the scheme has been strong, with 139 bookings so far. In addition to this assistance, which I must emphasise is available only once and is for all returning residents, yesterday the Manx Solidarity Fund announced a support package specifically for returning students. up to an additional £250 will be available to help towards the cost of self-isolation accommodation for students returning home to the island for Christmas. They will need to demonstrate a need for additional financial support and will need to show proof that they are in receipt of a grant or loan from the government. Applications can be made online at manxsolidarityfund.com, and my thanks to the fund and to everyone who has contributed towards it. Looking ahead to next year and our borders, we know the current restrictions cannot last forever. The new year will start to bring a new set of circumstances and new considerations. Will the vaccines be approved and a programme underway? What will be the impact of the current lockdowns in the United Kingdom? What might be the impact of decisions on Christmas taken in the United Kingdom this week? What will they be? We don't know the answer to any of these questions at the moment. What we do know is that they will shape our decision making. One final point on borders before I move on. Our air bridge with Guernsey, I am happy to report that given the level of cases in Guernsey and the Isle of Man, we are now in discussions to explore how air links between our two islands might be re-established in the future. I spoke earlier about how our measures to prevent the spread of the virus not only protects lives, but also livelihoods. Yesterday, the UK's Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak, delivered a statement to Parliament on his spending review for the next year ahead. Now, I don't propose to go into detail here, but the message was stark. The scale of the fiscal challenge facing the United Kingdom is considerable. An 11% contraction of the economy, a scale of national borrowing not seen since the Second World War, and a potential for an increase in unemployment of 1 million people. Yet a further reminder of how lucky we are. We have not been immune to the economic shock of COVID-19, and I know for some out there, things have been really tough. But our collective action to control and eradicate the virus has not just protected lives, it has protected our economy and jobs. Turning now to testing and vaccines. On the testing front, I am pleased to announce that private testing for those who require confirmation of being COVID-free prior to travelling is now available. As with our 7-day test scheme, the cost will be fixed at £50 per test. If you require a private test for travel-related purposes, you may contact COVID 111 line to arrange an appointment and make the payment. On the vaccination front, we now have the appropriate legislation in place and we have access to a supply of the vaccines confirmed. Work continues at pace to put in place the logistics and infrastructure required for a mass vaccination programme. We must remember that a project of this scope and scale is unprecedented in modern times. It will take significant planning and considerable resources. It is now a matter of waiting for the governance and regulatory approval process to run its course, and I will keep you updated on developments. I'm sure many of you will have noticed the cold and crisp weather over the past few days. We can be in no doubt that winter is here. Many of you will regularly hear of the pressures that winter can bring to bear on our health and social care services. This is a challenge every winter, but one which we must monitor carefully with the looming threat of COVID. I would like to hand over to Minister Ashford, who will go into a little more detail on the pressures being experienced in our health and social care system, particularly in our hospitals at Nobles and in Ramsey. David.
Thank you, Chief Minister. I want to take the opportunity to focus on the winter pressures being experienced in the health service, particularly at Nobles Hospital at the current time. The number of daily admissions through the emergency department at Nobles has been rising over recent weeks and is higher than average when compared to the same period last year. In order to manage this demand, from the 27th of November, we are going to temporarily have to halt non-urgent elective orthopaedic operations to create additional bed capacity. I need to stress that emergency cases still will be dealt with as normal, and day cases, clinics and minor injuries will also continue to be covered by the orthopaedic team as normal. We have also activated our winter plan, which the Chief Minister mentioned, which was drawn up precisely for these circumstances, which will focus on maintaining an efficient flow of patients through the hospital and prioritise those who need to be prepared for discharge. The current rise has been caused by a mix of acute care needs, so there's no one significant single cause. While seasonal illnesses account for some of the demand, it's not a substantial part of the demand. So, in closing, although we've had to make some changes in order to cope with the winter pressures, I would emphasise that this doesn't mean that people should act any differently. You should treat any symptoms or concerns as you normally would, usually consulting your GP or local pharmacist in the first instance, and, of course, in a medical emergency, still dialling 999. Thank you, Chief Minister.
Thank you very much, David, and I'm certain everyone in our community will act responsibly to help protect our health and care services from unnecessary pressure this winter. Before moving to questions from the media, I wanted to pick up on a topic from last week, the transfer of pets by ferry. A decision was taken, given the prevalence of the virus in the United Kingdom, that it was no longer appropriate to allow Isle of Man residents to collect pets and horses from the United Kingdom, even when remaining on board, without then self-isolating upon return. What I want to make clear is that it is simply not the change in government's policy, but as I understand it, also a change in policy by the Isle of Man Steam Packet Company. Until last month, I believe the steam packet would allow pets to travel on their onboard kennels without owners. By law, pets cannot travel unaccompanied, as someone must ensure their welfare during the journey. The steam packet did, however, allow pets to be booked for passage, with staff members on board taking the role of the attendant, responsible for the animal's welfare during the journey. That policy has changed and is a matter for the steam packet. It is not a decision taken by Isle of Man government. Now, I know this has caused disappointment and frustration for some. The existing arrangements remain unchanged for food-producing livestock. To be clear, individuals can travel with their pets and horses as they wish. However, like all travellers, they must self-isolate when they return to the island to ensure the safety of the island's community. And now to questions from the media. And first, we have Tim Glover from Manx Radio. Good afternoon, Tim. Fastamai.
Just on the subjects, we had a lot of comments in about people not going to be seeing relatives who are across. They're not able to come over and do the 14-day isolation over Christmas. And just, you mentioned a few of the factors that I think we're all aware of that will change border policy. But are we, in fact, just waiting now for everyone to be vaccinated before there's any easing of border restrictions?
Well, no, that's not something that we recognise. Obviously, if it happens quickly, then that may bring it forward. But we've been looking at around an infection rate of around 100 cases per 100,000. At the moment, sadly, in the United Kingdom, in the northwest, in Northern Ireland, it's between 400 and 500 cases. If there is a significant reduction in the numbers, then we are prepared to allow people to come onto the island to visit family members, but they would have to self-isolate for a period. But at this moment in time, sadly, despite the best efforts of the United Kingdom in reducing the spread of the virus, the numbers are still too high to take that risk of allowing additional people to come to the island. But it's something we are monitoring. Obviously, if a vaccine comes out, the first people to be treated will be people in care homes, residential homes, and the staff that look after them. And once we've got enough people vaccinated, then if the UK still haven't got their figures correct, then in a good place, then of course we will revisit that position. And as I said, I'd just like to reiterate how heavy it is on our shoulders for myself and the Council of Ministers not to be able to allow currently family members to come over to visit their family on the island. But of course, we're reviewing this on a regular basis.
And just on people coming or wanting to come to the island, we had this in. and I'll read it. Does anyone know what is required to convince our Lebanon government to allow a person from across to have the chance to visit an elderly mother to see her for one last time as possibly end of life? The initial request was turned down as they don't consider it potentially end of life to have severe dementia, to be post-serious stroke and with a current infection at 80 years of age. The question really is Cabinet Office qualified to make medical decisions?
Well, there is a criteria which they follow, and I think maybe David or Henriette, if you'd like to expand on that.
Yeah, I'll bring the Director of Public Health in a minute, if I may, Chief Minister, just to say that Cabinet Office does consult with the Department of Health in individual cases. So where it comes to things like assessing if someone is end of life, that decision will not be made by the Cabinet Office team. They will speak to the medical practitioners involved to get an understanding of the particular case. But I'll bring the Director of Public Health in case she's got anything she wishes to add.
Yes, really, just to confirm what Minister Ashford has just said and to say that obviously people's conditions can change, so people can reapply if the situation changes and then it will be re-evaluated again. But the decision is certainly not made by administrative staff in Cabinet Office. It's made in conjunction with the medical teams that know what the situation is.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I hope that reassures all your listeners. Right, next we have Josh Stokes from ITV Granada. Good afternoon, Josh. Fastamai.
Good afternoon, Chief Minister. We've seen today the UK government announce which tiers certain areas will be placed into. From the Council of Ministers' point of view, does this local action overseas affect your decision on the border stages? For example, are you looking at the northwest in particular to have a low infection rate or even specific travel routes? Or are you still looking at the UK infection rate as a whole before determining whether any changes can be made?
Well, I think we really have to look at the northwest. And whilst Liverpool has come down and is maybe tier two, I think off the top of my head, Manchester was tier three. And obviously we have a lot of people going through there, patients and people visiting in the northwest. So obviously we look at the figures. I think given the high percentage of our people who travel through Manchester, Liverpool, it will be their figures that will impact. If you look at our good friends in Guernsey, for example, down in Cornwall, they are at level one. They are down to about the 100 to 180 cases per 100,000. That makes it easier for the people of Guernsey to move into the United Kingdom or accept visitors. Sadly, we're not there. And again, if you look, our good friends in Northern Ireland are in a similar position where it's fairly high numbers. I don't know, Henriette, if there's anything you'd like to add on that.
Yes, I mean, also to add that, of course, West Lancashire, which is where the ferry departs from, is also in a tier three with a very high level at the moment.
Yeah.
So just to clarify then, is there a potential chance of an air link continuing from Manchester to the Isle of Man and letting people come from Manchester before letting people come from London, for example?
Well, we have to take it on a case-by-case basis. So if something's changed significantly, then we will look at it. That said, how do you know if someone's come through, say Liverpool, where it's a lower rate, they might have travelled from Manchester to come to Liverpool to fly here. So they might be at a much higher risk of infection. So we will take expert advice on this when we're making our decisions. But I'm afraid at this moment in time, even taking into account that Liverpool is tier two and Manchester's tier three, it's still too high an infection rate per 100,000.
OK, thank you. My second question, I'm pressing this again as it's important to a lot of people and I've had people contact me as well about this. For those with family in the UK wanting to travel to the Isle of Man to see loved ones for Christmas, why are you preventing them from coming back and self-isolating with their families or making some sort of provisions similar to the ones that has been made for students?
Well, students are residents who've gone away for a short period of time. So their home address is the Isle of Man. They are away for a matter of months and then they come back again, whether that be at Christmas, Easter, the summer, etc. Whereas people who live off the island, they're paying taxes off the island, they're living away from the island, they would be an additional risk. Now, obviously, once the infection rate has come down, we will welcome them with open arms. We want to see them on the island. But just at this moment in time, we've had to make a clear distinction between the two groups. As I say, one group are our residents who have just gone away for a short period of time. The other one are maybe ex-residents who are living away from the island, and they would be additional numbers coming to the island. And as I say, this really does sit heavily, Josh, on our shoulders when we're making decisions like this. But equally, we want to maintain the island as COVID-free. And the minute the infection rates improve in the United Kingdom, then that's something that we will be allowing as soon as it's safe for the rest of the population.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Josh. Next, we have Sam Turton from the Isle of Man newspapers. Good afternoon, Sam. Fast am I.
Fast am I, Chief Minister. We could start off with people who are saying they obviously are disappointed that their families can't come here. It sounds that they are considering going away for Christmas and even perhaps over the new year. But the current financial support system only runs up until December 31st. Is there going to be a change in policy regarding household isolation or financial payments required to be changed now before January 1st?
Well, if you think about it, if you're going back to work, you would have to be going back to work on the 14th of January, which I don't think there's many people will be doing this. I mean, we can't have a bottomless pit of money going out. We're doing our best to help people travel. So if you're generally going away to see your family during Christmas, then you're going to have to be back at work before the 14th of January. I can't see people being allowed to be that long away from work. So therefore, we think that by opening it up to the end of December, we will help all those people who have gone away to see Christmas with their loved ones, with the financial support. At the end of the day, the money has, you know, the taxpayer is funding this. The any borrowings or reduction in our income has to be funded by the taxpayer, and you've just got to look at the situation. If there is a significant change, then obviously we're happy to look at this, but we are looking at other options in the new year to help people going forward as well, Sam.
Thank you. And this may be perhaps more for Mr. Ashford and for Dr. Ewart, but in terms of vaccinations, we know we've identified that the most vulnerable will be given them first. At what stage is the planning at now to say who comes next and who follows that? And what is the projected time frame from a government perspective for when this starts, without asking for a date for when it starts, but from start to finish, how long do you think this could be looking at? Weeks, months?
OK, well, if I bring in Henrietta first and then David, if he wants to add anything to that.
Yes, in terms of the rollout, it will start with the vulnerable who are residents in care homes and the staff, and it will then roll out by age group, so with the oldest first working through to the youngest. I understand that the plan is for it to start rolling out in December, and Minister Ashford will be able to give more detail about how that will happen here. And it is estimated that it will take between 4 and 6 months to actually roll out across the whole programme.
If I could bring David in now, it's worth pointing out that it's going to take a lot of time because we've got to give two of these vaccinations. It's not just one vaccination and then after 7 days your immunity kicks in. It's two vaccinations. With some it's 2-3 weeks apart, with another it's a month apart. So that makes it really hard to do it quickly. But David, would you like to expand on that?
Yeah, as Henrietta said, Sam, we will start with the most vulnerable group, which is those in the care homes, the staff that is doing them, and then we'll work down through the age groups. We're hoping that if we can get the initial stock of vaccines and everything runs to time, then we can start doing that in December. It will probably be late December, so obviously you've got the Christmas period to contend with as well. So the programme will be properly up and running in January. But we do have to caution that, of course, we're still awaiting the market authorisations for the vaccines. We're still awaiting the final safety sign-offs. Once those are through, we will be able to move pretty quickly. We've already got the supply chain set up with the UK. So the start date is pretty much dependent on those marketing authorisations and those safety sign-offs and when they come through.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. So just to reassure the public, we've got our legislation amended now to make sure that we can use the vaccines, but we really are now dependent on the sign-off in the UK from the regulatory authorities on when we can move forward. So we've been planning this for a little while now, and we will move the minute that we are able to do so. But it is out of our control on the date when we can actually start, Sam. But thanks for the question. OK, next we have Alex Bell from BBC Isle of Man. Good afternoon, Alex. Fastamai.
Good afternoon. People who are scheduled to go for off-island medical appointments in the near future will be, I'm sure, understandably shaken by the unfortunate news that a Manx patient has died in a UK hospital this week. And obviously our condolences to that patient's family. I just wonder, what reassurances can you give to those patients? What measures are government here taking to maybe lessen the risk of this happening again over in the UK?
OK, well, I might ask David to deal with that question.
Yeah, of course, Chief Minister. Well, Alex, obviously the situation that has occurred is absolutely tragic. I knew the individual personally, and I've already paid a personal tribute to them because they were a well-known member of our Isle of Man community, and the circumstances is absolutely devastating for their family. In relation to reassurance of patients, there is very strong infection control policies in UK hospitals. That doesn't mean that it's always going to work. We have to be honest about that, and I've been honest about that before. But we have to remember the numbers of patients we've been sending over, which is in the hundreds, if not over 1,000 over the period. There has now been 2 cases where people have tragically come back from patient transfer with COVID and died. So in terms of the numbers, it is exceptionally low. And what I need to urge people is that they need to make decisions based on their actual medical condition. You know, I wouldn't want to see people saying, well, it's not safe to travel across, so I'll put something off. And they actually put themselves at more detriment because the numbers, the chances of someone contracting it is very low. And we have seen very, very low cases compared to the numbers that are travelling. So I would urge people that where they need to, they still continue with their medical appointments because there is a lot of procedures put in place at those hospitals to keep them safe.
And did you expect patients to be consulting with their doctors on a case-by-case basis about whether travelling across is absolutely essential?
Well, that is already done, to be perfectly honest, Alex. I mean, we don't just send people for the sake of sending them. We send them because we believe that there's something that they actually need to have done. So that is already done in a triage point of view. If it's something we can do on Ireland, then obviously we will do it on Ireland. And one of the great things the staff across the whole of DHSC have been very good at during this pandemic period is innovating and delivering certain things that have never been delivered on Ireland before. So if someone is being sent across, it has already been assessed that they do need to go. So I would urge people to think very carefully before they change their minds about attending appointments, because what we've got to be very careful of is that they don't end up doing themselves detriment for another reason.
Thank you, Minister. And possibly another question for you. You mentioned the pressures starting to take grip on Nobles Hospital as the winter months progress. This is without COVID. In the unfortunate situation that community spread does begin again, and we all hope it doesn't, just how do you expect Nobles to cope through the winter months?
So that is built into the winter plan. If you remember, Alex, we had the Ward 20 situation that was built up, ready for COVID. That is still there and can be utilised. Equally, if the worst came to the worst, we would redesignate the private patients unit again to allow for the isolation bays and side wards. So we do have that resilience there. We also have the ability for intensive care purposes to convert back the operating theatre to double our intensive care capacity again. So all of that is built into our winter plan and we can activate it pretty quickly if required.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Alex. And it's a good point to reiterate again, if everyone can do their utmost to keep themselves healthy, by washing hands, coughing into the crook of their arm, just being sensible, really, to try and keep down the number of visits that are needed to our hard-working teams in Ramsey and at Nobles Hospital. This is an event, as an ex-health minister, the winter months are always a significant problem to all jurisdictions, not just the Isle of Man, and bed spaces are always tight in the winter months, and sadly this year is no different, no matter how much planning you do. But it's a very good point to raise. Next we have Rob Pritchard from 3FM. Good afternoon, Rob. Fastamai,
Chief Minister. My first question for Minister Ashford, again just on the subject of Nobles Hospital. You mentioned that elective orthopaedic surgery is being suspended from tomorrow. I just wonder, first off, What advice is then going to be given to those patients who will have their operations suspended? And also, what effect will this have on other departments within the hospital? Will it start to squeeze the operations, I guess, of any other particular practice?
Well, I've got to be perfectly frank, it will have an impact, obviously, on orthopaedics because it will delay and build up further the backlog in orthopaedic surgery. But we need to do that in order to create capacity. We're hoping that it will be a very temporary suspension until we can get over this period where we are seeing a high rate of admissions through the ED department. So we're hoping to keep it as basically as short as possible. It is only the elective, I must point out, that is being cancelled. So emergency or basically life-threatening operations will continue as normal, as will the day clinics and everything else. So we will be cured. So it's not a case of orthopaedics shutting down. It is purely those that will have elective surgery. I apologise for the inconvenience that it is going to cause people. We've got to recognise that. But we do need to do this to ensure that we have appropriate bed space for those that need an emergency admission.
I suppose just for clarity on that, as you've made clear, it is only elective surgery. But that move, will it have any effects on other practices in the hospital outside orthopaedics?
My understanding is not. At the moment, the impact will be purely on the orthopaedics area.
Thank you very much. My second question for you, Chief Minister. You did touch on the fact that discussions may be starting up again with regards to a travel corridor with Guernsey. Could you give us any more details on that, on sort of what stage it's at or what the case figures currently are over there?
Yeah, well, obviously, it's been a conversation between our directors of public health. In the early days, I will be discussing this with their Chief Minister, Peter Fairbrush, in the near future. But maybe Henrietta, you might like to come in and just give a comment on your conversations with Guernsey Public Health.
Yes, the public health reason for suspending the, or recommending that we suspend the air bridge, was because Guernsey had a case and then a cluster of cases, the origin of which they couldn't initially trace. So potentially it represented community transmission. And that was the reason why it was decided, after discussion with both sides, to suspend the air bridge. That cluster is now closed. They've gone beyond the incubation period in which one would expect to see any further cases resulting from it. And following extensive contact tracing, they did determine that there was a travel-related case that underlay that cluster. So we're content with where they are with their cluster and the fact that they now just are seeing occasional sporadic travel-related cases, and they are content that we're in the same position with regards to the cluster that we had, which we had from the beginning, a travel-related index case, and that cluster is also now closed.
And just for clarity on top of that, thank you very much. What stage then, in terms of, you mentioned that there's sporadic spread over there, what threshold does Guernsey have to meet in terms of cases for this air bridge to potentially come back?
No, it's not sporadic spread, it's sporadic cases.
So long, that's what I meant, sorry, yeah. That's what I meant.
And that's absolutely the key difference. So long as you have any opening of the border, you will see sporadic cases. And so long as those are identified and contained and there are no secondary cases, then there is no concern that they are actually seeding transmission in the community.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Rob. And now on to Paul Moulton from Isle of Man Television. Good afternoon, Paul. Fast am I.
Good afternoon, Chief Minister. Carrying on about with Nobles Hospital being under pressure, I'm intrigued because flu, as already been said, is down. I mean, because of the very nature of the transmission. So that would normally be what would be not only seeing a lot of input through the hospital, but obviously can cause death in certain cases. Maybe you can put a bit more information to us about what it is that's being passed on. I mean, and does it have any relevance to being passed from one person to the other, like having 8,000 people in Strand Street? Would that have caused a potential blip, for instance?
Well, if I think I'll bring in the Health Minister, or Henrietta, is there anything you want to add before I bring in the Health Minister on that?
Only to confirm that respiratory illness as such is low, and we've already been through the issues about gatherings, including Strand Street, so I don't have anything to add to that. So.
Right. OK, David, you've got the latest views on that, as the Health Minister, if you want to come in.
Yeah, happy to. Paul, in relation to it, there is no sort of cluster of illness as such that is causing it. It's across the board in acute care. So we haven't seen, there's no sort of spike to say we're seeing more of this one condition than anything else. It's certainly not infectious diseases. It's not respiratory diseases. It's just general acute care that we've actually seen a rise of. So I'm happy, for instance, Paul, to share with the fact, which I've got through from Nobles today. I mean, normally at this time of year, we'd expect to see 10 to 12 admissions per day, Monday to Friday at this time of year. At the moment, we're seeing about 15, 16 or 17. So it's about nearly 50% up on where we would expect it. We're hoping, of course, like I say, that this is a temporary blip. But obviously, this is why we have a winter plan each year, so that we can actually cope with this and make sure that people need acute care can get it.
And has this put pressure on A&E? I mean, is it people, you know, doing things in A&E scenario, or they actually have to go in and be, you know, from the doctor being passed in there?
No, it's people who require admission. So it's not people just turning up at A&E. It's actually people who are presenting perhaps through the emergency department, but they do require acute care in hospital.
Okay. Next point. Obviously, Qantas, you probably followed that story, have been the first airline to say that no one's travelling with them unless they've got the vaccination form when they get their, the injection for the COVID. You own the seaports, and you obviously have quite influence now over the airlines with Logan. Will you be pursuing that sort of route when that time comes that people can only come, or maybe even go from the Isle of Man, when they've got valid vaccination forms?
Well, I think that's something that we'll have to look at near the time. At this moment in time, we haven't got the vaccine to use on the island at this moment in time. We will have to take obviously advice to ensure that it's enforceable. And if it's something that we could say, you can come and visit the island if you're vaccinated. But that's a few months down the road yet, Paul. It's going to take a while for us. It's going to take a while for the United Kingdom and the rest of the world to deliver the vaccine, because it has to be done in two injections, and it has to be two, if not a month, 2 weeks or a month apart. So we've got a little bit of time to be looking at whether that is a policy that we wish to go down that route. But as I say, we would review on a regular basis, and if that is something that we feel is relevant, then I'm sure we'll certainly look at it. But at the time, certainly not at the moment.
A game changer potentially for a TT, albeit a delayed TT, that it could be seen to happen next year if things are in place, right?
Well, I think we need to be realistic. I think in my last week's speech, I said whilst the vaccines could be a silver bullet, they weren't a speeding silver bullet. It is going to take several months for all jurisdictions, not just the Isle of Man, but all jurisdictions, to deliver a vaccine. And therefore, it's not something that we're going to be able to say that by Easter we will be totally on top of this. It's going to be several months to get everyone into a good position where we've got our vaccination under control. So we'll just have to monitor this, I'm afraid, Paul. Right, last but not least, we have Simon Richardson from Business 365. Good afternoon, Simon. Fast am I? You better take yourself off mute, Simon.
My apologies. My first question relates to Logan Air. Obviously good that they're restarting flights between the Isle of Man and London with a substantial subsidy from the Manx government. Have they given you any assurances that they will continue to fly the route after the pandemic subsides if the numbers don't come up to their expectations?
No, we've agreed the contract with Logan Air until next year. There's an exact date on that. And nearer the time, we will be looking to see how it's worked, how many people have used it, has it been beneficial to the island, and what are Logan Air's plans? Does it need supporting? So there's a lot of questions that the Minister for Infrastructure, working along with the Minister for Enterprise, will consider near the time. So it is purely for a certain period. If memory serves me correct, it's circa the 27th of March that it's guaranteed for. But don't quote me on that. If it's any different, I'll let you all know. But it'll be under review as obviously the vaccination programme develops. Then we may see a significant increase in the people using that flight.
Thank you. And secondly, it's been announced that from December the 1st, the NHS in the UK will make flu vaccination available for everybody over 50 at GP surgeries or at pharmacies. Is it the case that the Isle of Man will be following suit?
I think I'll let David answer that one.
Yep, thank you, Chief Minister. In relation to that, we are looking at it, what they've been doing in the UK. At the moment, our criteria remains the same. One of the things that always drives us flu vaccination is supply. In most years, we actually have an oversupply, but we have to remember that the orders for flu vaccination go in for January for the next winter. So we did run short this year. We managed through DHSC to actually source more supply and bring more into the island. But what's important is we get those vulnerable categories done first before we start looking at widening anything out. That will depend upon how much supply of vaccine it remains. And of course, that is the caveat the UK has put around their rollout as well, that it depends upon the amount of supply available.
Are we close to doing that? Because I understand there's quite a few people who are sort of a year under the age where they would automatically get it, or even a matter of months, who still can't get the vaccinations, can't get the flu vaccine.
Yeah, at the moment we're still working for those that are in defined criteria. But like I say, if there is an oversupply, then we can look to expand that. But it is dependent upon supply. And like I say, that's exactly the same caveat the UK has put on their position as well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Simon, and thank you all for your questions. Christmas is coming, as they say. Our job now is to stay the course. We must work together to follow the rules and act responsibly. If we do, there is every chance we can end this most challenging of years and be able to enjoy the festive traditions and activities we would in any other year. Please stay safe. Please stay responsible. That's all for today. Thank you very much.